go with you today.
Yeah? What happened?
Mom reached for the drink again. There was a noticeable trembling in her hand.
I went to the mini-mart for smokes. On the way home, I ran into Nettie. The Tides was open. I thought I'd have a quick drink. I needed one to, you know. But when I looked up again, it was too late.
She took a drag off her cigarette, looked at Lauren through the gray haze.
You look bad. Maybe you should sit. You want an aspirin? I'll get you one.
I'm fine.
I'm sorry, Lauren, she said softly. For once, Lauren heard real regret in her mother's voice.
It's okay.
She bent down and started picking up pizza boxes and empty cigarette packs from the floor.
It looks like you and Jake had quite a party last night.
When Lauren looked up, her mother was crying. It warmed her heart, that simple proof of emotion.
Lauren went to her, knelt beside the sofa.
I'm okay, Mom. You don't have to cry.
He's gonna leave me.
What?
My whole life is nothing, and I'm getting old.
Mom put out her cigarette and lit up another. This hurt more than the slap. Even now, on this terrible day, her mother's thoughts were on herself.
Lauren swallowed hard, moved away.
Very slowly, she went back to picking up the apartment. She had to hold back tears with every breath.
I didn't go through with it, she said quietly.
Her mother looked up. Her eyes were bloodshot and rimmed in blurred mascara.
What?
It took her a minute to figure out the meaning of Lauren's words.
Tell me you're kidding.
I'm not kidding.
Lauren tried to be strong, but it felt as if she were crumbling. The pain in her heart was swift and sharp. As much as she knew it was crazy, impossible, she wanted her mother to open her arms right now, to hold her as she never had, and say, "It's okay, honey."
I couldn't do it. I'm the one who needs to pay for my mistake, not...
She looked down at her stomach.
Baby,
her mother said coldly.
You can't even say the word.
Lauren took a step forward. She was biting her lower lip and wringing her hands.
I'm scared, Mom.
I thought you should be scared. Look at me. Look at this.
She stood up and made a sweeping gesture with her hands as she crossed the room.
Is this a life you want? Did you study like a fool for this? You'll lose out on college this year, you know that, right? And if you don't go now, you'll never go.
She grabbed Lauren by the shoulders and shook her.
You'll be me. After all your hard work, is that what you want, is it?
Lauren pulled free, stumbled back.
No,
she said in a small voice. Mom sighed heavily.
If you couldn't make it through an abortion, how in God's name do you think you can handle adoption? Or worse yet, motherhood. Go back to the clinic tomorrow. This time I'll go with you. Give yourself a chance in life.
The anger seemed to slide out of her then. She pushed the hair from Lauren's eyes, tucked a strand behind her ear. It was perhaps the gentlest her mother had ever been. The tenderness was worse than being yelled at.
I can't.
Mom stared at her through eyes that were glazed with tears.
You break my heart.
Don't say that.
What else can I say? You've made your decision. Fine. I tried.
She bent down and grabbed her purse.
I need a drink.
Don't go, please.
Mom headed for the door. Halfway there, she turned back around.
Lauren stood there, crying.
She knew the desperate plea to stay was in her eyes.
I can't, her mother said. I remember.
Remember what?
Mom almost started to cry again.
I'm sorry.
Then she left. The next morning, after a fitful, sleepless night, Lauren woke to the sound of music bleeding through the walls. It was the Bruce Springsteen CD. She came upright slowly, rubbing her swollen, gritty eyes. Mom's party had obviously turned into an all-nighter. It wasn't surprising, she supposed. When your 17-year-old daughter got herself knocked up, there was nothing to do but party. With a sigh, she climbed out of bed and stumbled to the bathroom, where she took a long, hot shower. When she was finished, she stood on the frayed scrap of towel that served as their bath mat and studied her naked body in the mirror. Her breasts were definitely bigger. Maybe her nipples were, too. She couldn't be sure about that, her nipples never having been high on her to-notice list. She turned sideways. Her stomach was as flat as ever. There was no sign there of the new life that grew within. She wrapped a towel around her and returned to her bedroom. After making her bed, she dressed in her school uniform. Red crew neck sweater, plaid skirt, white tights, and black loafers. Then she turned off her bedroom light and walked down the hallway. In the living room, she stopped, frowned. Something was wrong. The ashtrays on the coffee table were empty. No half-filled glasses lined the kitchen counter. The ratty old purple afghan that usually draped over the back of the sofa was gone. Gone? No way. Even Mom wouldn't... She heard an engine start up outside. It was the throaty, unmistakable growl of a Harley-Davidson motorcycle. Lauren rushed to the window and whipped the flimsy curtain aside. There, down on the street below, Mom sat behind Jake on the motorcycle. She was looking up at Lauren. Lauren touched her fingertips to the glass. No. Slowly, as if it hurt to move, her mother waved goodbye. The motorcycle roared down the street, turned the corner, and disappeared from view. And the boss sang on, "Baby, we were born to run." Lauren stood there a long time, looking down at the empty street, waiting for them to come back. When she finally turned away, she saw the note on the coffee table. That was when she knew. She picked it up, opened it. A single word had been written in bold blue ink. Sorry. Lauren squeezed her eyes shut. There it was, the whole of her mother-daughter relationship reduced to a single word. Chapter 21. Angie dialed Lauren's home number for the third time. "Still no answer?" Mama asked, coming out of the kitchen. Angie went to the window and stared out. No, it's not like her to miss work. I'm worried. Girls of that age screw up sometimes. I'm sure it's nothing. Maybe I should stop by her house. A boss doesn't just show up. She missed a night of work. So what? Probably she's out drinking beers with her boyfriend. You are hardly comforting me, Mama. Mama came up beside her. She'll be at work tomorrow. You'll see. Why don't you come home with me? We'll have wine. I'll take a rain check, Mama. I want to get a Christmas tree. She leaned against her mother. In fact, I'm going to leave early, if that's okay. Papa would be happy to see his cottage decorated again. Angie heard the crack in her mother's voice, and she understood. Mama was facing her first Christmas without Papa. She put her arm around her mother's narrow waist, drew her close. I'll tell you what, Mama. On Wednesday, let's make a day of it. We can go shopping and have lunch, then come home and decorate the tree. You can teach me how to make tortellini. Tortellini is too difficult for you. We begin slowly, with tapenade, maybe. You can use a blender, yes? Very funny. Mama's smile softened. Thank you, she said. They stood there a moment longer, holding each other as they stared out at the night. Finally, Angie said goodbye, grabbed her coat, and left the restaurant. The town square was a beehive of activity on this cold and cloudy night. Dozens of die-hard tourists milled about, oohing and aahing over the thousands of white lights strung throughout the town. At the end of the street, a group of carolers in red and green velvet Victorian clothing sang Silent Night. More tourists and a few locals huddled around them, listening. You could recognize the locals by their lack of shopping bags. A horse-drawn carriage rumbled down the brick-paved street, bells jangling. The first tree lighting ceremony of the year had obviously been a success. Next Saturday's would be even bigger. Tourists would arrive by the busload. The locals would grumble that their town had turned into Disneyland, and they would stay away at all costs. The restaurant would be packed all week. By the time she reached the Christmas shop, it had begun to snow. She flipped her hood up and hurried across the street, ducking into the store. It was a Christmas wonderland, with trees and ornaments and lights everywhere. Angie came to a stop. Directly in front of her was a thin, noble fir tree spangled with silver and gold ornaments. Each one was stunningly unique. Angels and Santas and multicolored glass balls. It reminded her of the collection Conlon had started for her all those years ago with a tiny ornament from Holland that read, "Our First Christmas." Every year since, he'd given her a new one. "Hey, Angie," said a lilting female voice. Angie looked up, wiped her eyes just as the shop's owner, Tilly, came out from behind the cash register. She was dressed as Mrs. Claus in a red dress that had been old when Angie was a kid. "I hear you've shaken it up at DeSaria's," Tilly said. "Rumor is your mom is so proud she is about to bust." Angie tried to smile. Life in West End had always been like this. No bit of business was ever too small to keep track of, especially if it was someone else's. She's having fun with the new recipes, that's for sure. "Who would have thought? I'd best get over there. Maybe after the holidays. So, what can I help you find?" Angie looked around. "I need a few ornaments." Tilly nodded. "I heard about your divorce. I'm sorry." "Thanks. I'll tell you what. Why don't you come back in 10 minutes? I'll have a tree full for you, at cost." "Oh, I couldn't. You'll give me and Bill dinner in exchange." Angie nodded. This is how her papa had done business in West End. "I'll go get my tree and be back in a flash." An hour later, Angie was on her way home with the tree strapped to the roof of her car, a box of ornaments in the back seat, and a sack full of Rite Aid white tree lights on the passenger seat. It took her longer than usual. The roads were slick and icy. Jingle Bell Rock blared from the speakers, putting her in the mood. She needed to be coaxed into the mood, to be honest. The thought of a Christmas tree chosen by her, put up by her, decorated by her, and enjoyed by her was a bit depressing. She parked in front of the cottage and killed the engine. Then she stood beside the tree, staring at the tree while snow fell like kisses on her face. The tree looked bigger than it had in the lot. Oh, well. She got a pair of her father's old work gloves from the garage and set about freeing the tree. By the time she was finished, she'd fallen twice, been smacked in the nose by an obviously vengeful branch, and scratched the car's paint. Tightening her hold on the trunk, she heaved the tree toward the house one step at a time. She was almost to the door when a car drove up the driveway. Headlights came at her. Snow drifted lazily in the beams of light. She dropped the tree and straightened. It was Mira. She'd come to help with the tree. "Sisters?" "Hey, you!" Angie said, squinting into the too bright light. "You're blinding me!" The lights didn't snap off. Instead, the driver's door opened. Mick Jagger's voice pulsed into the night. Someone stepped out. "Mira?" Angie frowned, took a step backward. It struck her all at once how isolated she was out here. Someone walked toward her, boots soundless in the fresh snow. When she saw his face, she gasped. "Conlon." He came closer. so much so that she could feel the warmth of his breath on her face. "Hey, Ange." She had no idea what to say to him. Once, years ago now, conversations had flowed like water between them. In recent times, that river had gone dry. She remembered Diane's words. "Twice I came into the office and found him crying." When you'd miss something like that as a wife, what could you say later? "It's good to see you, beautiful night." They spoke at exactly the same time, then laughed awkwardly and fell to silence again. She waited for him to speak, but he didn't. "I was just going to put up the tree."
"I can see that."
"Do you have a tree this year?"
"No."
At the look on his face, so sad, she wished she hadn't asked. "I don't suppose you want to help me carry it inside?"
"I think I'd rather watch you wrestle with it."
"You're 6'2", I'm 5'6". Get the tree inside." He laughed, then bent down and picked up the tree. She raced ahead to open the door for him and get the stand ready. Together, they put the tree in the stand. "A little to the left," she said, pushing the tree to a straighter position. He grunted and went back under the tree again. She battled a sudden bout of sadness. Memories came at her hard. As soon as the tree was upright and locked into place in the stand, she said, "I'll get us some wine," and ran for the kitchen. When she was out of the room, she let her breath out in a rush. It hurt just looking at him. She poured 2 glasses of red wine, his favorite, and went back into the living room. He stood by the fireplace, staring at her. In his black sweater and faded Levi's, with his black hair that needed to be cut, he looked more like an aging rock star than an ace reporter. "So," he said, after she'd given him the wine and sat down on the sofa, "I could tell you I was out this way on a story and just stopped by.
I could tell you I don't care why you're here."
They sat on opposite sides of the room, making cautious conversation, talking about nothing. Angie was finishing her 3rd glass of wine by the time he got around to asking a question that mattered.
"Why did you come by the office?"
There were so many ways to answer that. The question was, how far out on the ledge did she want to go? She'd spent a lot of years telling Conlon half-truths. She'd started out protecting him from bad news, but deceit was an icy road that spun you around. She'd ended up protecting herself. The more her heart had been broken, the more she'd turned inward, until one day she'd realized that she was alone.
"I missed you," she said at last.
"What does that mean?"
"Did you miss me?"
"I can't believe you can ask me that."
She got up, moved toward him. "Did you?" She knelt in front of him. Their faces were so close she could see herself in his blue eyes. She'd forgotten how that felt, to see herself in him.
"It made me crazy," she said, echoing the words she'd said to him in the nursery all those months ago.
"And you're sane now?"
She felt his breath on her lips. It brought back so many memories.
"Sane's such a grown-up word.
But I'm definitely better.
Mostly. I've accepted it."
"You scare me, Angie," he said quietly.
"Why?"
"You broke my heart."
She leaned the tiniest bit toward him.
"Don't be afraid," she whispered,
reaching for him.
Chapter 22. Angie had forgotten how it felt to be really kissed. It made her feel young again. Better than young, in fact, because there was none of the angst or fear or desperation. There was just this feeling moving through her, electrifying her body, making her feel alive again. A tiny moan escaped her lips, disappeared. Conlon pushed her back.
She blinked at him, feeling that edgy near pain of desire.
Con?
He felt it too. She could see it in the darkness of his eyes, in the tightness around his mouth. For a moment there, he'd lost himself. Now he was climbing to safer ground.
I loved you, he said.
If there had been a veil left over her memories, the past tense of that sentence would have ripped it free. In 3 words, he'd bared his soul and told her everything that mattered. She grasped his arm. He flinched, tried to draw back. She wouldn't let him. In his dark eyes, she saw uncertainty and fear. A hint of hope was there, too, and she seized on it.
Talk to me, she said, knowing that he'd learned not to talk to her.
In the months after Sophie's death, she'd become so delicate that he'd learned to hold her in silence. Now he was afraid to care about her, afraid her fragility would return and, like a rising tide, drown them.
What's different now?
What do you mean?
Our love wasn't enough for you.
I've changed.
Suddenly, after 8 years of obsession, you just changed, huh?
Suddenly. She drew back. In the last year, I've lost my father, my daughter, and my husband. Do you really think I can go through all of that unchanged? But of all of them, Con, the one that rips me apart and keeps me awake in the middle of the night is you. Papa and Sophia, they were meant to go.
You.
Her voice dropped.
You. I left behind.
It took me a long time to realize that. I wasn't there for you. Not the way you were there for me. And it's hard to live with that. So sudden change, I don't think so.
I knew how deeply you were hurting.
And I let that be what mattered. She touched his face again, gently. But you were hurting too.
Yes, was all he said.
They stared at each other in silence. Angie didn't know what else to say.
I can't do it again, he said, drawing back.
Make love to me, she said, surprising herself. The desperation in her voice was obvious. She didn't care. The wine had made her bold. His laughter was shaky and forced.
It's not quite that simple.
Why not? All our lives we followed the rules. College, Catholic wedding, career, kids. She paused. That was where we got caught. We thought it would be easy, but it wasn't. And we ended up like those animals in the Kalahari who get stuck in the mud and die. She leaned toward him, so close he could have kissed her if he chose. But there's no map for us anymore. No right way. We're just a couple of people who have lived through tough times and come out in a new place.
Take me to bed, she said softly.
He cursed. There was anger in his voice. And defeat. She seized on that. Please, love me. He groaned and reached for her, whispering, "Damn you," as his mouth found hers. The next morning, Angie woke to the familiar cadence of rain hammering the roof and sliding down the window panes. Conlan's arms were around her, holding her close even in sleep. She backed into him, loving the feel of him against her skin. His slow, even breathing tickled the back of her neck. They'd slept in this position for all of their married life, spooned together. She'd forgotten how safe it made her feel. She eased away from him just enough to roll over. She needed to see him. She touched his face, traced the lines that pain had left on him. They matched her own. Every wrinkle was the residue of how they'd lived and what they'd gained and lost. Sooner or later, all of it took up residence on your face. But the young man was there, too, the man she'd fallen in love with. She saw him in the cheekbones, in the lips, in the hair that hadn't yet gone gray and needed to be trimmed. He opened his eyes.
Morning,
she said, surprised by her voice. Love, she thought. It touched every part of a woman, even her voice on a cold winter's morning. Morning. He kissed her gently and drew back. What now? She couldn't help smiling. It was so Conlon-like. The whole, we have no roadmap anymore, didn't work for a man who made his living looking for answers. She knew the answer for her. She'd known it the minute she saw him at the theater in Seattle, and probably long before that. But they'd already failed once, and that failure had marked them, damaged them. I guess we just see what happens, she said. We've never been too good at that sort of thing. You know us, the plan makers. Us. That was enough for now. It was more than she'd had yesterday. We need to be different this time, don't we? She said. You have changed. Loss will do that to a woman. He sighed at the mention of their loss, and she wished she could take the words back. How did you undo years, though? Once, their love had been characterized by hope and joy and passion. They'd been young then, and full of faith. Could two grown people ever really find their way back to that? I have to be at work by noon. Call in sick. We could... No. He pushed away from her and got out of the bed. He stood there, naked, staring down at her through unreadable eyes. We were always good in bed, Ange. That was never the problem. He sighed, and in that sound was the reminder of all that had gone wrong between them. He bent down for his clothes. While he was dressing, she tried to think of what to say to stop him from leaving. But the only words that came to her were, "Twice I came into the office and found him crying." She'd broken his heart. What could she say to him now that would matter? Words were such impermanent things, there and gone with a breath. "Come back," she finally said as he walked toward the door. "Sometime. When you're ready." He paused, turned to look at her. "I don't think I can. Goodbye, Angie." And then he was gone. Angie was distracted at work. Mama noticed her behavior and remarked on it more than once, but Angie knew better than to say anything. Gossip as juicy as, "I slept with Conlon," would burn through the family. She didn't want to hear 16 opinions on what had happened, and more importantly, their fear would taint it. She wanted to hold on to the hope that he'd come back to the cottage sooner or later. Instead, she focused on more immediate worries, like the fact that Lauren had missed another shift and hadn't bothered to call. Angie had left several messages, but none of them had been returned. "Angela." She realized that her mother was speaking to her and put down the phone. "What, Mama?" "How long are you going to stand there staring at the telephone? We have customers waiting." "I'm afraid she's in trouble. Someone needs to help her. She has a mother. But sometimes teenagers don't tell their parents everything. What if she's feeling all alone?" Mama sighed. "Then you will rescue her. But you be careful, Angie." It was good advice, common sense. It had kept Angie away from Lauren's house for 2 days. Each day the worry had grown, though, and Angie was beginning to have a bad feeling. "Tomorrow," she said firmly. Every day it was harder to fit into the ordinary world of high school. Lauren felt as if she were an alien, plopped down on this planet without any skills that would allow her to survive. She couldn't concentrate on her classes, couldn't keep a conversation, couldn't eat without throwing up. Baby, baby, baby ran through her thoughts constantly. She didn't belong here anymore. Every moment felt like a lie. She expected the news to break any second and the rumors to start. "There's Lauren Ribido. Poor girl. Knocked up. Ruined." She didn't know if her friends would rally around her or cut her loose. And the truth was, she didn't know if she cared. She had nothing in common with them anymore.
Who cared about the pop quiz intrigue or the scene that Robin and Chris made at the dance? It all felt childish. And though Lauren felt trapped in the gray world that wasn't yet womanhood, but had moved beyond childhood, she knew she'd never really be young again. Even David treated her differently. He still loved her. She knew that without question, thank God. But sometimes she felt him pull away from her, go off in his own place to think, and she knew that in those away times, he was contemplating all that their love had cost him. He would do the right thing, whatever the hell that was, but it would cost him Stanford and all the benefits that came from a school like that. Most of all, it would cost him his youth, the same price that she'd already paid.
Lauren!
She looked up, surprised to realize that she'd laid her head down. She hadn't meant to. Now her teacher, Mr. Knightsbridge, was standing by her desk, looking down at her.
Am I boring you, Lauren?
A ripple of laughter moved through the room. She straightened. No, sir.
Good!
He handed her a pink slip.
Mrs. Detlis wants to see you in her office.
Lauren frowned. Why?
I don't know, but it is college time and she is the senior counselor.
Lauren couldn't have gotten an answer on her applications yet. But maybe she'd forgotten to fill something out or mailed a packet to the wrong address. Like it mattered now. She gathered up her books and papers, put everything in her backpack, and walked across campus to the school's main office. It was icy cold outside. A residue of snow dusted the ditches and fields. Strangely, it felt cold inside the office, too. Mary, the school secretary, barely looked up from her work when Lauren walked in, and Jan, the school nurse, looked away too quickly to be anything but rude. Lauren walked down the hallway that was plastered with ads and coupons for colleges and academic camps and summer jobs. At Mrs. Detlis's office, she paused, drew in a deep breath, and knocked.
Come in.
Lauren opened the door. Hey, Mrs. D, she said, trying not to sound nervous.
Lauren, sit down.
None of the usual banter and no smile. This was going to be bad.
I spoke to David this morning. He says he's thinking about bagging Stanford. He said, and I quote, something's come up. Do you know what that something is?
Lauren swallowed hard. I'm sure he won't give up Stanford. How could he?
How could he, indeed?
Mrs. Detlis tapped her pen on the desk while she eyed Lauren.
Naturally, I was concerned. The Haineses are an important family in this school.
Of course.
So I called Anita.
Lauren sighed heavily.
She wouldn't tell me anything, but I could tell she was upset. So I sent Coach Tripp to the boys' locker room. You know how close he and David are.
Yes, ma'am.
So, you're pregnant.
Lauren closed her eyes and swore under her breath. David had promised not to tell anyone. By the end of the day, the word would be out if it wasn't already. From now on, everywhere she went, she'd be the subject of gossip, of pointed fingers and whispering. There was a long pause. Then Mrs. Detlis said,
I'm sorry, Lauren. More than you can know.
What do I do now?
Mrs. Detlis shook her head. I can't tell you that. I can tell you that no pregnant girl has ever graduated from Fircrest. The parents tend to throw a fit when the word gets out.
Like with Evie Cochran?
Yes. Evie tried to stay, but in the end it was too difficult. I believe she's with an aunt in Linden.
I don't have any relatives. The counselor wasn't listening. She opened a manila envelope, read the contents, then she closed the folder.
I've already spoken to the principal at West End High. You can finish out the semester there and graduate in January.
I don't understand.
You're here on scholarship, Lauren. It can be revoked at any time for any reason, and you've certainly given us a reason. We look to you to be a role model. That will hardly be true in the coming months now, will it? We think it will be better for everyone if you graduate from West End High.
There's only 6 weeks left in the semester. I can handle gossip. Please, I want to graduate from Fircrest.
I think you'll find it unpleasant. Girls can be awfully cruel to one another. Lauren knew about that. Back before Project Geek No More, when she'd looked wrong and spoke poorly and lived in the trashy part of town, no one had wanted to be friends with her. In her naivete, she'd thought she'd changed all that when she remade herself into a girl that fit in. Now she saw the painful truth. It had all been a veneer, a thin, clear layer of lies over who she really was. The real girl was visible now. She wanted to be angry, to access the ambition and determination that had taken her through Furcrest's doors in the first place. But all that fire felt so far away, and she was cold. How could she argue with the role model stuff? She was a pregnant girl at a private Catholic school. If she was an inspiration to anyone now, it was as a warning. Be careful, or you'll end up like Lauren Ribideau. Go to West End, Mrs. Detlef said gently. Finish up the semester and graduate early. Thank God you have enough credits. It's where you belong. Lauren heard the words as clearly as if they'd been spoken aloud. But that was another lie. The truth was, she didn't belong anywhere. Lauren returned to class and went through the motions of high school. She took notes and filled out her daily planner with upcoming assignments and talked to her classmates. Once or twice, she even smiled. But inside she felt cold. An unfamiliar anger was spreading through her blood. David had promised to keep their secret. He knew, they knew, it would get out sooner or later, of course, but not yet. She wasn't ready to face the questions and gossip. By lunchtime, she'd gone beyond anger. She was pissed. She ignored their friends and strode across campus to the weight room. He was there with his football buddies. Amid the clunking of weights and the huffing of exertion, they were talking and laughing. When she stepped into the room, it fell silent. Damn you, David, she thought. She felt her cheeks heat up. Hey, she said, trying to sound normal, as if she were just another high school girl instead of a ruined one. David slowly sat up. The way he looked at her made it difficult to breathe. Bye, guys. No one answered him. In silence, she and David walked across the campus and out to the football field. It was a cold, crisp day with a layer of frost glittering on the grass. The air smelled vaguely of apples. How could you do it? She said at last. Her voice was surprisingly soft. She'd expected to scream the question at him, maybe hit him for emphasis. But now that she was here, she was icy cold and afraid. He took her hand and led her to the bleachers. They sat down on the cold, hard seat. He didn't put his arm around her. Instead, he stared out at the grassy field and sighed. You promised, she said again, louder this time, her voice shrill. And Coach Tripp! Everyone knows he has a big mouth, didn't you think? My dad won't talk to me anymore. Lauren frowned. But she didn't know how to finish her sentence. He said I'm a stupid idiot. No, a fucking idiot. Those were his exact words. David's breath floated out in pale clouds. She lost her anger. Just like that, it was gone. Something inside her seemed to fold inward. She touched his thigh and leaned against him. For all the years she'd known him, he'd been trying to get his father's attention. It was one of the things they had in common, parents that didn't seem to love you enough. The speedster was David's pride and joy, not because it was the envy of other boys or because girls loved it. He cared about the car because his father loved it. What David cared about were the hours spent in the garage with his dad. There, and only there, it seemed, they'd talked. He won't even work on the car. He says there's no point in fixing up wheels for a kid who's going nowhere. He finally looked at Lauren. I needed to talk to someone.
A guy. How could she not understand that? This was a time of almost unbearable loneliness. She slipped her hand in his. It's okay. I'm sorry I yelled at you.
I'm sorry I told him. I thought he'd keep quiet.
I know. They fell silent again, each staring out at the field. Finally, Lauren said, "At least we have each other."
Softly, in a voice that held no confidence, he said,
"Yeah."
When Lauren got home, Mrs. Mock was waiting for her on the front step. By the time she saw her, it was too late to turn around.
"Lauren," she said, sighing heavily, "I went to see your mom at work today."
"Oh? Did you catch her?"
"You know I didn't. Her boss said she'd quit, left town."
Lauren sagged beneath the weight of those two words.
"Yeah, I'm going to get a full-time job. I promise..."
"I can't do it, kiddo," she said. And though Lauren could see she didn't like this news, she broke it anyway. "You can't afford this place by yourself. My boss is already tired of your mom's late payments. He wants me to evict you guys."
"Please don't."
Mrs. Mock's fleshy face folded into a sad look.
"I wish I could help you. I'm so sorry."
She slowly turned and went inside. The busted screen door banged shut behind her. If one more person told Lauren they were sorry, she was going to scream. Not that it would do any good. She trudged up the stairs, walked into her apartment, and slammed the door shut. "Think, Lauren," she said, searching for her old self, the girl who could climb any mountain. "Think." Someone knocked. She squeezed her eyes shut, feeling the sting of useless tears. No doubt Mrs. Mock had forgotten to tell her that she needed to vacate the premises by tomorrow. She went to the door, yanked it open.
"I can't..."
There, standing in the gloomy darkness, was Angie.
"Oh,"
was all Lauren managed to say. "Hello, Lauren." Angie smiled, and there was a gentleness in it that caused Lauren a physical pain. "Maybe you'd like to invite me in." Lauren imagined it. Angie Malone inside, walking on the smelly shag carpeting, sitting, no, not daring to sit, on the lopsided sofa, looking around the room, making judgments, feeling sorry for Lauren.
"No, not really."
She crossed her arms, blocked the doorway with her body.
"Lauren?"
Angie said sternly. It was the mother voice Lauren was helpless to resist. She stepped aside. Angie eased past her and went inside. Lauren stumbled along beside her. It was impossible not to see the place through Angie's eyes. Tawdry stucco walls, stained from years of chain-smoking, cloudy windows that revealed no view except the brick building next door. She couldn't possibly offer Angie a seat.
"You want a Coke?"
she offered nervously, moving from foot to foot. When she realized what she was doing, practically dancing the Macarena, for heaven's sake, she forced herself to stand still. To Lauren's utter amazement, Angie sat down on the broken sofa. Not one of those "I'm worried about ruining my clothes" perches either. She sat.
"I don't need a Coke, but thanks."
"About my job?"
"Yes."
"I should have called."
"Yes, you should have. Why didn't you?"
Lauren twisted her hands together. "It's been a bad week for me."
"Sit down, Lauren."
She didn't dare get too close to Angie. She was afraid one touch would make her cry. So she grabbed a chair from the dinette set and dragged it into the living room, then sat down.
"I thought we were friends," Angie said.
"We are."
"You're in some kind of trouble, aren't you?"
"Yes."
"What can I do to help?"
That was all it took. Lauren burst into tears.
"No, nothing. It's too late."
Angie left the sofa and went to Lauren, taking her in her arms and pulling her up from the chair. Lauren's sobs grew louder. Angie stroked her back and hair and said it'll be okay about a dozen times.
No, it won't, Lauren said miserably when the tears eased. My mom dumped me.
Dumped you?
She ran off with a guy named Jake Morrow.
Oh, honey.
She'll be back.
No, Lauren said quietly. The surprising thing was how much it hurt to admit. After all the years of knowing how little her mother loved her, still it wounded her.
And Mrs. Mock says I can't stay here. How am I supposed to earn enough money to pay for my own apartment?
She looked down at the floor, then slowly up at Angie.
That's not even the worst of it.
There's something worse than that? Lauren took a deep breath. She hated to say these words to Angie, but what choice did she have?
I'm pregnant.
Chapter 23. God help her, Angie's first reaction was envy. It stung her heart. She felt its poison begin to spread.
9 weeks, Lauren said, looking miserable and young. So desperately, impossibly young.
Angie pushed her own feelings aside. There would be time, late at night, she supposed, when she was vulnerable and lonely, to think about why the world was sometimes so unfair. She scooted backward and then sat on the coffee table. She needed some distance between them. Lauren's pain was so palpable. Angie wanted to make it go away, but this wasn't one of those times. A hug wouldn't do it. She stared at Lauren. The girl's red hair was a tangled mess. Her round, puffy cheeks were paler than usual, and her brown eyes were steeped in sadness. If ever a girl was in need of mothering, no, she thought.
Did you tell your mother? Angie asked.
That's why she left. She said she raised one mistake and wouldn't do it again.
Angie sighed. It had, over the years of her infertility and losses, occurred to her often that motherhood was too random. Too many women that shouldn't raise a child were granted that gift, while others lived with arms that felt empty.
I tried to have an abortion.
Tried?
I thought I'd just take care of the problem, you know, be mature, but I couldn't do it.
You should have come to me, Lauren.
How could I come to you with this? I knew it would hurt you, and I didn't want you looking at me the way you are.
How's that?
Like I'm stupid.
Angie was drawn forward in spite of her best intentions. She tucked a stringy lock of hair behind Lauren's ear. I'm not looking at you like that. I'm sad and scared for you, that's all. Lauren's eyes filled slowly with tears.
I don't know what to do. David says he'll bag Stanford and marry me, but it won't work. He'd start to hate me. I don't think I could stand that.
Angie wished there was something, some string of magic words that would ease this poor child's heart, but sometimes life backed you into a corner and there was no easy way out. Lauren wiped her eyes, sniffed, and sat up straighter.
I don't mean to dump all this on you. I'm just scared. I don't know what to do, and now I have to find a new place to live.
It's okay, Lauren. Take a deep breath. Angie looked at her. What do you want to do?
Go back to October and use a condom.
Angie laughed, but it was sad and a little strained. Do you and David want to keep the baby?
I don't know. How can I know something like that? I want...
She sagged deeper in her chair and bowed her head. Angie could tell that she was crying. She made almost no sound, as though she'd learned to keep her tears inside.
It's my mess. I got myself into it. I have to get myself out of it. Maybe Mrs. Mock will let me stay here for a while longer.
Angie squeezed her eyes shut, feeling tears of her own. Memories came at her hard. Lauren at Help Your Neighbor House, freezing cold, but asking for a coat for her mother.
in the grocery store parking lot on a rainy night, pressing flyers on windshields, saying softly, "I can't go to the homecoming dance," and then hugging Angie for something as simple as a borrowed dress and some makeup. Lauren was alone in the world. She was a good, responsible girl, and she'd do the right thing or die trying. But how could a 17-year-old possibly find the right way on so treacherous a road? She would need help. At the thought, fear spiked hard, bit deep. "She's not your daughter, Angela. You be careful with this girl." It was good advice, and now, this moment, Angie was terrified not to take it. She'd worked so hard to come out of the darkness of baby wanting. How could she let herself slide backwards? Could she stand by Lauren and watch her belly grow and grow? Could she survive the intimacies of another woman's pregnancy, the morning sickness, the dreams that expanded with every gained pound, the wonder in tiny words like, "She kicked me. He's a little gymnast. Here, touch my stomach." And yet, how could she turn Lauren away at a time like this? "I'll tell you what," Angie said slowly, unable, really, to do anything else. "Why don't you come live with me?" Lauren gasped, looked up. "You don't mean that." "I do." "You'll change your mind. You'll see me get fatter and you'll..." "Have you ever trusted anyone?" Lauren didn't answer, but the truth was in her eyes. "Trust me. Come to the cottage for a while until you figure out your future. You need to be taken care of." "Taken care of?" Angie heard the wonder in Lauren's voice. It was such a simple thing, caring. But what a crater in the soul its absence must leave. "I'll clean your house and do the laundry. I can cook, too, and if you show me what are weeds..." "You don't need to clean my house," Angie smiled. Though the fear was still there, the nervous, "Can I watch this up close?" tension, she felt good, too. She could make a difference in this girl's life. Maybe she'd never be a mother. That didn't mean she couldn't act like one. "Just show up for work when you're scheduled and keep your grades up, okay?" Lauren threw herself into Angie's arms, holding her in a death grip. "Okay." Lauren packed her clothes and school uniforms, unnecessary now, her makeup and her mementos, and still there was room left over. The last thing she packed was a small framed photograph of her and her mother. In it, they looked like a pair of showgirls, their faces poked through painted openings. In truth, Lauren didn't remember ever posing for this picture. According to Mom, they'd been in Vegas at a truck stop on the way west. For years, Lauren had tried to create a memory that matched the image, but one had never come. It was the only picture of them together. She placed it safely between the layers of clothes and closed the suitcase. On the way downstairs, she stopped at Mrs. Mock's apartment. "Here are the keys," she said.
"Where are you going?"
Lauren grabbed the woman's arm and led her to the window. Outside, on the street, Angie stood beside her car, looking up at the building. "That's Angie Malone. I'm going to live with her." She heard the wonder in her voice.
"I remember her."
"You'll sell the furniture for back rent, okay?"
"Okay."
Mrs. Mock looked down at the keys, then up at her. Her smile was sad.
"I'm sorry, Lauren. If there's anything I can do to help..."
She let the sentence trail off. They both knew it had nowhere to go. Lauren appreciated it all the same. "You were good to us, letting the rent be so late and everything."
"You got a bum deal, kiddo. Your mom was a real piece of work."
Lauren handed the manager a piece of paper. On it, she'd written Angie's home address and phone number, as well as the restaurant's information. "Here," she said softly. "When my mom comes home, she'll want to know where I am." She heard the old neediness in her voice, that raggedy edge,
She couldn't help it.
When?
When it falls apart with Jake, and it will fall apart. She'll be back.
And you'll be waiting.
Mrs. Mock made the words sound pathetically sad. What could Lauren say to that? All of her life she'd been waiting for her mother's love. There was no way she could simply put her hope aside. It was a part of her, that faith, as ingrained as the beat of her heart or the flutter of her pulse. But it didn't hurt as much anymore. The sense of her loss was duller, almost distant. She glanced down at Angie again, who was waiting to take her home. Home. Then she looked at Mrs. Mock again and said, I'm okay now.
You're a good kid, Lauren. I'll think good thoughts.
Maybe I'll see you around.
I hope not, Lauren. Once you're out of this part of town, you stay out. But I'll be here if you ever need me.
With a last smile, Mrs. Mock said goodbye. In the hallway, Lauren grabbed her suitcase off the floor and hurried outside and down the steps. You want me to get the rest of it? Angie asked, moving toward her. This is everything, Lauren said, patting the suitcase. Oh. Angie stopped. The merest of frowns darted across her brow. Then she said, Well then, we're off. On the drive through town and along the beach and up the hill, Lauren stared out the window, saying nothing. Every now and then the moonlight hit just right, and she found herself staring into her own reflection. She couldn't help but see a smiling girl with sad eyes. She wondered if they'd always be sad now, always see the chances she'd lost. That had certainly happened to her mother. She cast a sideways glance at Angie, who was humming along with the radio. Probably she didn't know what to say either. Lauren closed her eyes. She tried to imagine her life with Angie as her mother. Everything would have been softer, sweeter. Angie would never slap her pregnant daughter, or run out on her in the middle of the night, or, here we are, home sweet home. Lauren's eyes popped open. Maybe she'd fallen asleep for a minute there. It all felt like a dream, that was for sure. Angie parked next to the house and got out. All the way to the front door and into the house, she talked over her shoulder to Lauren, who hurried along, dragging her suitcase. Oven's about 20 degrees hotter than the indicator. No microwave, sorry. These rusty old pipes... Lauren tried to take it all in. Besides the information Angie was giving her, she noticed a few other things. The windows needed to be washed, for instance, and there was a rip on the sofa's arm. These were jobs Lauren could do to help out. Angie kept talking as they went upstairs. Great water pressure. I recommend lashing yourself down or you'll fly out of the shower. The pipes ping a little at first, and definitely don't flush the toilet just before your shower. She stopped, turned. It's okay to share a bathroom, isn't it? If not, it's fine, Lauren said quickly. Angie smiled. I thought so. Good. Well, here's your room. All of us girls used to sleep here. She opened the door at the end of the hall. It was a big, beautiful room with a steeply sloped ceiling and timber beams. Pink wallpaper, tiny rosebuds and vines, covered the walls. Matching bedspreads were on the two sets of bunk beds. A small oak writing desk was tucked in one corner. To its left, three expansive rectangular windows looked out over the ocean. Tonight, moonlight tarnished the silvery waves. Wow, Lauren said. The sheets haven't been washed in a while. I can do that now. No! Lauren sounded harsh. She hadn't meant to. It was just... overwhelming. I can do my own sheets. Of course. You're an adult. I didn't mean to imply that you didn't know how to do laundry. It's just that... Lauren dropped the suitcase and ran to Angie, throwing her arms around her. Thank you, she said, burying her face in the warm, sweet crook of Angie's neck. Slowly, Angie hugged her back. When Lauren felt herself start to cry, she tried to pull back, but Angie wouldn't let her. Instead, she stroked Lauren's hair, murmured that it would be okay.
Over and over, it's okay now, Lauren. It's okay.
Lauren held on so tightly she could barely breathe.
What?
The word was spoken in unison, shouted, actually. Angie fought the urge to step back. Lauren moved in with me. Her sisters and Mama stood in a line staring at Angie.
This is you, being careful with the girl?
Mama demanded, slamming her hands on her hips. I think it's great, Livy said. They'll be good for each other. Mama waved her hand impatiently.
Be quiet! Your sister isn't thinking straight.
She took a step forward.
You just don't go around inviting red-headed strangers into your home.
She's hardly a stranger, Livy said. She's been working in the restaurant. She's good, too.
Until she just didn't show up for 3 days, Mama said. For all we know, she was on a crime spree.
Livy laughed. Right. Driving from town to town, robbing mini-marts, stopping only long enough to refill her ammo and take a math test. Angie moved nervously from foot to foot. She hadn't expected such a reaction to the moving-in news. What came next would be a different matter. The word ballistic came to mind.
Angie, Mira said, moving closer, studying her. There's something you're not telling us.
Angie winced.
What? You're keeping secrets, too?
Mama made a snorting sound.
You know Papa will tell me everything.
Angie was cornered. There was nothing she could do. Pregnancy wasn't the kind of secret that stayed secret. She glanced down the row of women, then said, There's one more thing. Lauren's pregnant. Ballistic turned out to be an understatement. The argument had gone on for hours. By the time it came to a tired, sputtering end, Mama had called in reinforcements. Both of Angie's brothers-in-law were there, along with Aunt Julia and Uncle Francis. Everyone in the room had an opinion on whether Angie was making a mistake. In a move that surprised everyone, Livy was the lone dissenter. Let her do what she wants, she said sometime in the second hour. None of us knows what it's like for her. That had brought the pseudo-town meeting to a crashing halt. At the oblique reference to Angie's childlessness, everyone looked quickly away. Angie shot Livy a grateful look. Livy winked and smiled back. Then it started up again. Angie couldn't stand it anymore. While they were arguing the pros and cons of the decision, she slipped out of the room and went upstairs. In her old room, she closed the door. The blessed silence soothed her. She figured she had about 6 minutes of solitude before Mama or Mira came after her. Less. The door opened. Mama stood in the doorway, wearing her disappointed face. It was a look her daughters knew by heart. 2 minutes, Angie noted, scooting sideways on the bed. That's a new record. Mama closed the door behind her. I sent everyone home.
Good.
Mama sighed, then sat down on the bed beside Angie. The old springs pinged beneath their weight.
Your papa, God rest his soul, would have yelled at you tonight. Him you would have listened to.
Papa never yelled at us. You did. Mama laughed.
He didn't have to yell. He let me rant and rave for a while, and then he drew a line in the sand. That's enough, Maria, he'd say.
She paused.
It's hard now, with no lines in the sand.
Angie leaned against her mother. I know. Mama laid her wrinkled hand on Angie's thigh.
I worry about you, that's all.
It is a mother's job.
I know, and I love you for it.
You will be careful, yes? I have seen your heart broken too many times already.
I'm stronger now, Mama.
Honestly, I am.
I hope so, Angela.
Chapter 24. Lauren was awake long before the alarm clock sounded. She'd gotten up around 5 to go to the bathroom,
and after that, she hadn't been able to go back to sleep. She would have started cleaning, but she didn't want to waken Angie. It was so quiet here. The only sounds were the surf whooshing against the sand and rocks, and the occasional